Kevin Kramer, entrepreneur, bottle washer, you know, North Dakota's U.S. Senator.
Taking out the trash in Washington, are you, huh?
I'm not strong enough for that.
You know, one time I did an interview with a gentleman, Peter DeCrassel is his name, I believe, and he was an author. And he wrote a book, and in the book he talked about how it wasn't until the invention of air conditioners that being a politician became a very sought-after job, because Washington, D.C. essentially is in a swamp.
I thought, well, the problem with air conditioning is what, you know, the founders, you used to be smart enough to get out of this town once summer hit, and they didn't come back until fall. And that's why they had that's why the August break is still a tradition, but it was unfit for human beings, and so the Congress couldn't do much damage to you between about May and October, probably, because it was so hot, but not anymore. That darn air conditioning.
That's what it was. I mean, it was amazing how air conditioning changed the world because of politics over summer, et cetera. And speaking of changing the world, you just came from a vote, is that correct?
I did.
How'd you vote?
I voted no. I've been voting no a lot lately.
That's a good thing.
A lot of nominees. This one's was a nominee. Is a nominee who will be confirmed. You know, not very. I forget the position. Not a super consequential one, but it was. He did a tweet recently, fairly recently, in which he said Republicans should stop calling their racism patriotic. And now he's coming seeking my vote. You know, for things.
Interesting. Well, I have no idea what's going on there half the time, I tell you. Let's focus on some energy issues and a little economic and even a few other things too as well. And you know, as I was kind of emailing back and forth with your staff, a few questions I wanted to ask you, you know, about is energy becoming the new ag 2.0, and we can talk about that, whether it be the subsidies or just some of the regulations that are happening in the world of energy. You've got a bill that you've introduced. I did want to ask you about inflation, which a conversation we're having is $100 oil, really $50 oil, meaning, you know, of the price of goods and inflation's created a market change so much that we should have this thought exercise at the very least. And then another one was, you know, more of the consolidation that's happening. Last year, I asked you about, you know, if we're heading down this path, we're going to have a dozen companies controlling 90% of the oil supply, you know, across the globe by the end of 2023. And you said, try four. And I thought, oh, boy. And, you know, we were both just trying to really demonstrate a point. But let's talk a little bit about inflation, energy issues, and some of the, you know, predictions that are going on out there. So let's talk energy first. You know, what's going on with the Biden administration and some of the regulations and just some of the issues that are happening right now?
My gosh, I don't even know where you begin with that. I mean, the Biden administration's been in all-out attack mode on American energy, particularly American fossil energy. That would be the energy that works all the time. Since the day he got into office. I mean, he repealed some of the rules and executive orders and whatnot his first day in office, and has been doing it ever since. So it's pretty brutal. I mean, think about this alone. Here we are coming off of a pandemic, an already booming expansion of our economy. Of course, workforce is a challenge because we were paying people not to work, and he doubled down on that notion. He puts out the prohibition of new leases on federal lands, which, you know, fortunately for North Dakota, we're not a big federal land state, but unfortunately for North Dakota, a lot of our oil, particularly oil and gas, is really kind of, you know, the heart of it is under federal jurisdiction, and so it had an impact, and his goal, his notion, I think, and the idea of people who believe what Joe Biden believes is that if we starve the supply, then somehow that'll starve the demand. And so right now in the United States, as we have this conversation, I think we're somewhere still about 2 million barrels less per day of production in the United States. But guess what? The demand is coming back. Even with the Omicron, you're seeing an expanding economy in the United States and around the world. But you're at the same time, isn't it ironic, that at the same time that's happening, we're now importing more from Russia, the country that is our nemesis, our adversary, with 100,000 military men on the border with Ukraine preparing to attack. We've empowered, by our policies, Russia, whose natural gas emits 40% more greenhouse gas emissions than American natural gas. It's absurd. It's absurd. Now, that wasn't bad enough to make sure that he could try to starve, he could starve production even more. You know, he cancels the Keystone XL pipeline. Now, the Keystone XL pipeline wasn't going to carry a lot of North Dakota's oil, but it was going to carry 100,000 barrels a day, and, of course, a whole bunch more of Canadian. I'd much rather have Canadian crude than Vladimir Putin's crude into our country. So, you know, that's just a couple of many. You know, he starved the workforce by paying people to not work and expanding that, Build Back Better, or as I would say, Build Back Broke plan that they're trying to pass on a straight party line vote now, would he do even more of that? Disincentivize work. I can get into it by answering more specific questions if you'd like, but it's clearly, it's an all-out attack on American energy, and it's counterproductive to the economy, counterproductive to national security, economic security, and it's really counter even to environmental security.
What is the end goal with the Biden administration? Is it to end the oil and gas industry? I mean, I don't see any way around it. I mean, they're trying to, you know, get oil and gas from anybody but American.
Well, fortunately, he just withdrew his nomination of the person to be the comptroller of the currency. Now, we had a hearing in the banking committee that I sit on with this person who just in the last year said that we want to starve the oil and gas industry of capital so they go bankrupt. That was his nominee to be comptroller of the currency. Now, that was just one of the many communist things that she said. The fact that she was educated at Moscow State University, I'm sure, is just coincidental. But this is who he wanted to put in charge of national banks. And she was so radical that three Democrats on the banking committee said they couldn't vote for her, so she wouldn't have gotten confirmed. So yeah, I think they do want to end oil and gas. But here's what's even crazier to me, Jason. You've got John Kerry, the quote diplomat, if you can call him that, running around the world, begging our allies like Japan and other Pacific countries to not buy American energy, which means they buy it from Vladimir Putin or Iran or Saudi Arabia. That's a bad decision. You can either buy it from a bad actor, a really bad actor, or a downright evil actor. But please don't buy American oil and gas or energy. That's the czar. That's the climate czar that works right in the White House.
Boy, the word czar couldn't be a more appropriate word right now, where my mind is.
So here's what I think they're doing.
Wow.
I think they want to keep it all in the ground in the United States of America, live with the illusion that somehow, we're going to have electric cars that run on electricity. They're powered by electricity that is generated by pixie dust and maybe a little bit of solar and wind when the wind blows and the sun shines. And that somehow big batteries are just going to magically appear out of the ground, and all of the minerals that they need are going to just come from somewhere other than China. And it's a pure fantasy. But in the process of doing all that, Jason, what they're really doing is they're not shrinking demand. What they're doing is they're transferring their climate guilt to polluting countries, like I've been talking about. So, just think in the last about 15 years, the last 12 years, something like that, America has reduced its greenhouse gas emissions by 14 to 15%. At the same time, China has increased its. In fact, the world has increased its greenhouse gas emissions 24%. At the same time, the United States has reduced its by 12%. We're the leader in reducing greenhouse gas emissions. These other countries are actually increasing their greenhouse gas emissions. So it makes no sense that we would transfer our responsibility and our opportunities to polluting countries, except that John Kerry can fly around in his private jet and say, look what a good boy I am. Makes zero sense.
Here's the thing that really worries me, and this is why, and I apologize for jumping in with my czar interruption, but it the word czar to me is affiliated with communist Russia. That's for when I grew up and when I was brought up with that term, that's how it was affiliated. So when they introduced that in America, of course, that jarred not only me, but everybody else who grew up with the word, you know, Dukes of Hazzard and other programs like that. So what I see happening either by hook or by crook or by unintended or by design, if the oil and gas industry, not energy, specifically if the oil and gas industry goes away, that's the last bastion for capitalism right there. Because every other industry is almost completely subsidized or regulated, that you need to go through four or five different rounds of yay or nay or bureaucracy before you can get anything done. And the way I look around the oil and gas industry, you got climate tax hovering over you, you got ESG scores already on Yahoo Finance, you got the president cutting deals with China and Russia. I mean, it's just, do you see what I mean, Senator Kramer? Talk to me a little bit about the future of capitalism, please.
Wow. Well, as you know, it is under direct attack. The Democratic Party is basically run by people who call themselves either progressives or democratic socialists. The chairman of the Senate Budget Committee is none other than democratic socialist Bernie Sanders. I mean, I'm not making this up. These people don't apologize for that. The nominee to be the vice chair of the Federal Reserve it was asked point blank in a House committee earlier this year by a member, are you a capitalist or a socialist? Now, 20 people before her and one after her, 21 out of 22 said capitalist. She would not say it. She said, well, we need a highly regulated financial services industry. He said, yeah, but are you a capitalist or socialist? Well, I don't think of it in those terms. We need a highly regulated financial service. It's multiple times he gave her the chance to say, are you capitalist or socialist? She wouldn't say it. Now, I don't know about you, but I conclude from that she's not a capitalist. It's not a hard answer. It's not a hard question. It's fundamental. So I worry a lot about it. This Build Back Better plan,
Hold on one second. Okay, we're back on. Go ahead. This Build Back Better plan.
Yep. So the Build Back Better plan that the Biden administration and the Democrats are going to shove through Congress, if Joe Manchin ever gives them the green light in the Senate, it's already passed the House, we now know is not a $1.75 trillion bill. It's a nearly $5 trillion tab over 10 years. It will drive up the deficit by, you know, a couple trillion dollars, and it's going to greatly enhance inflation. And worse than that, it's going to take care of individuals from cradle to grave. In other words, make everybody a state, subject to the state, make sure that everything's paid for forever, disincentivizing people to go to work, which means there'll be fewer people producing products and producing an economy, and more people receiving from the government. It is absolutely everything that our founders and the pioneers of this great country were against. It's what nearly every immigrant that's come to the United States of America came to escape. And it means that there'll be much less opportunity. I mean, I've cross-examined Janet Yellen now, the Treasury Secretary, a couple of times in the Banking Committee. It astounds me that she can sit there and say, no, all of this free money is going to bring down the cost of things. To which, you know, I asked Jay Powell the other day, have you ever talked to an economist who concluded that more free money brings down the cost of something? Well, he wouldn't answer because he doesn't like to get into political discussion.
The answer is no. There's no such thing. More free money is what creates inflation. You asked the question earlier, are we going to have $100 a barrel oil that costs, that's really only $50 a barrel because of input costs? Agriculture is the same way. We see food inflation on the one hand, which can be good for the producer, but input inflation exceeds it, so it's actually a net, it goes backwards. We see it in wage inflation, right? We see people's wages going up at a very good rate, except the costs are exceeded. So in other words, they're making less money. This is what happens with hyperinflation. Hyperinflation is caused by putting too much demand into the economy and not enough supply, or in other words, too much free money, you could say the supply of money, and it just drives the cost of everything up. And that's what we're seeing, and it's going to continue to be that way. And that, I'm afraid, is not capitalism the way you grew up as a paperboy, or the way I grew up cleaning the cafe in Kindred, or working for the Rural Electric Co-op when I was in high school. So, it's slipping away from us if we don't do something quickly. Now, here's the good news. The good news is the American people don't want socialism. And while many younger people have been brainwashed at their high schools and colleges and universities in this country, there's still enough of a thread that wants to hang on to what we've always had. That is the exceptionalism of America. And we, as moms and dads and grandpas and grandmas and bosses and the administrators, wherever we might have a role or influence, need to remind people. Socialism has been tried in many countries. In fact, if you want to see a good example of it, go to Venezuela today. Go to Cuba today. If that's what you aspire for the United States of America, be a Democrat. But it's not what most people aspire to. Was that too harsh?
Not at all. Not at all. I kind of stood up a little bit. I got excited there because it's, and for me, it's not even about the bashing of the socialism or the communism or a lot of these other things like in the traditional way. It's more that what the capitalism really does is it empowers people. And sure, when you empower people, that's really how you build societies. You build societies and cultures by empowering. The other socialism and communism, they've basically ripped and crumbled societies in the history of civilization, really, because you become complacent and either the Mongols come or something happens, either within or on the outside. So, just beware of the Ides of March, folks. American Energy Jobs and Climate Plan, what's happening there?
Ouch. Okay. Yeah, that's a lot, isn't it? So here's what's happening there. So what you've just called out is a framework. It is not a bill, although it does include several bills. It's what my friend Dan Sullivan, the good senator from Alaska, and I call a Republican alternative, a conservative alternative to the Green New Deal. And it is a market-oriented, innovation-oriented response to people who want us to do something about climate change. And by the way, Jason, a lot of people do. The vast majority of people in this country believe that climate change is a crisis. An even larger majority think it's one of the more important things we got to be dealing with. So it's a very, very large group, and this is what's driving a lot of what the left is doing. The problem is their solutions are not good for the climate or good for the economy or good for national security. So we're offering up a framework of solutions that's more geopolitical in nature. It focuses on realistic goals. It, first of all, recognizes that the United States of America is the leader in the world in reducing greenhouse gas emissions. I'm so tired of our leaders in this country today, our particularly administration leaders, running around the world apologizing for the United States of America and trying to transfer their climate guilt to polluting countries. So first thing we're doing is stating the facts. China emits 300% of the emissions that the United States of America emits. As I said earlier, in the last 15 years, we've reduced greenhouse gas emissions in the United States by 12%, while the world has increased them by 24%. We've got to tell our story. And then talk about how much cleaner American fossil energy is than the fossil energy that's being produced in other countries to meet the growing global demand while we shut off ours. in addition to all of that, there are innovations that can clean up even further, clean up the production and the development of energy in the United States. Things like carbon capture and storage. Better yet, carbon capture utilization and storage. Fracking and horizontal drilling itself, Jason. I don't know that anybody's ever done this. I should check this out. Maybe you already know this, but I just wonder what kind of an environmental footprint reduction horizontal drilling has created in the oil and gas industry. Imagine going down a mile and then you go out a mile, and then in the same hole you go out another mile, and in the same hole you go out another mile. You don't even have to drill a new hole. And then that other mile turns into 3 miles, you know, because of advanced technologies. These are significant innovations and advancements in the production of oil that ought to be recognized for cleaning up the environment, not criticized for making it dirtier. So I want to focus more on that. But I also want to focus more on the fact that these other polluting countries get preferential treatment in many parts of the world. While we're cleaning up the environment, they dirty it up, they get preferential treatment. So I think we ought to be more strategic in our supply chain, everything from pharmaceuticals to energy to manufacturing of all sorts. We ought to bring more of that to the United States. Will it cost a little more to produce some things? Probably. Does it create more jobs and a better economy in the United States? Absolutely. And will these things be produced and manufactured in a cleaner, more environmentally friendly way? Without a doubt. And I think we ought to use the fact that we're 20% of the economy of the world, use that leverage, much like Donald Trump often talked about, use an America First strategy that recognizes our exceptionalism and our market leverage, and bring people into compliance with our standards instead of us simply acquiescing to someone else's standards. So that's sort of a broad stroke of it. There'll be more details coming out. We've talked about a number of the details and detailed ideas, but at the end of the day, it's empowering, back to your market, your free market discussion earlier in capitalism, it empowers the innovators rather than killing the innovators with regulation.
Do you remember Y2K?
I'm afraid I'm old enough to remember it very well. Thank you very much.
Y2K. Now, I'm going to actually bring this home here. Now, hang on here. Follow me, folks. So
I'm with you, buddy.
Now, Y2K was this big, you know, dooms. Actually, my friend Sterling says the entire doomsday prepper market came out of Y2K. And that's actually true. So when you take a look at all these shows on Discovery and History Channel involving doomsday preppers, that's because of Y2K. Now, here's the reality behind Y2K. The banking industry had it under control. The government jumped on the bandwagon of a solution that was already being taken care of. Are we to believe that Chase Manhattan Bank was not going to solve a couple of ones and zeros and the two decimals after, you know? Of course they were going to. So that's what I believe is happening right now is you take a look at the research done by, you know, the Rockefeller Foundation, Jesse Osselin is his name. He does a great study on humans have been decarbonizing for well over 150 years. And right now there's a certain private interest group that jumped on a movement that was already happening. The oil and gas industry, the coal industry, the nuclear industry, all these industries have been decarbonizing long before the Sierra Club or Greta Thunberg came along. So I applaud you on any more awareness that can be done to let the world know that the oil and gas industry, the coal industry, the hydrogen industry, the nuclear industry, they've been decarbonizing and being innovative long, long ago and continue to do it because that's in our best interest as a species and their best interest as a company. Does that make sense?
I'm voting for you. Whatever you're running for, I'm voting for you. You got me.
Well, and that's where we're at, really. I mean, because we've been solving these problems. And what worries me is we're giving away a lot of our grandkids' money and a lot of our current freedoms in order to solve a problem that a lot of the oil companies were already figuring out.
No question about it. Oil companies, this is what I mean by don't kill the innovator. If you regulate oil and gas and coal and manufacturing out of business, all you've done is killed the innovator that's going to solve the problem you're trying to solve. And we've got to continue to beat that drum. As you know, I've been doing my Bully Pulpit series events now. First one with David Solomon from Goldman Sachs, the second one in Fargo with Brian Moynihan from Bank of America, talking about ESG, talking about solving the problem, talking about financing real solutions here in the United States of America rather than trying to get a foothold in China where slave labor produces pretty much everything. But we need to be a loud voice in the right ear of these large corporations who are listening to, you know, their naive and idealistic young staffers, and, of course, activist investors and Hollywood stars who don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Well, I see. I know you got a 4:15 coming up, so thank you for your time today. Any final thoughts?
Let's not wait so long to talk, because I got a lot to say, and you hardly have a thing to say, I've noticed.
Huh? No, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, so you're shrinking back into the wall. Not at all. I love this, Jason. I love what you do. I think it's so important, and I love being part of it. And if ever I can be helpful in, you know, getting you other guests or things, you know, if you have an idea, give me a shout, and I'll try to get some other points of view that'll agree with me.
You bet. Well, we'll keep you to that. I appreciate the time.
You're the man.